Janasalakaya Chaksu Samritam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Sapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sakadantikam. We were hearing about the Lord's Leela avatars. Leela avatar means when Krishna comes to this earth to perform different pastimes, different activities for the purpose of delivering or inspiring the souls within this world, the people in this world, or the living entities within this world, to give up their sense of false domination over the material world and to become his servant. It is by becoming a servant of Krishna that we can become happy. Otherwise, it is not possible. Regardless of what we do within the world of matter, independently from Krishna, Krishna's service, we cannot be happy. This world is called Martyalok. What does Martyalok mean? The place of death. So how can anyone be happy knowing that soon they're going to die? The only way one can be happy is if one takes shelter of illusion in the sense of forgets. One forgets the reality, pushes the reality far from him. But if we live on the Krishna conscious level, on the level of our relationship with God, then that level is eternal. That's an eternal level. And then, on that level, we'll be happy. So in any case, Krishna comes to this world so many times. We've heard an answer to the questions that Narada Muni asked of Lord Brahma. We've heard how Krishna creates this world through his energies. He maintains it. And then ultimately, he destroys it. But not only does he act as the creator and the maintainer and destroyer of the material world, but he also personally comes in so many different forms. So we've heard many, many of the different lila avatars or pastime incarnations, or when Krishna comes in particular specific forms. Who can remember one of the ones that we heard about? Lord Ram. Another one. Parsaram. And another one. Nrisingadev. Another one. Varahadev. Kurma. Another one. Vishavadev. So many different incarnations. There were two more on the list that we didn't cover, read about yesterday. One was Lord Buddha and his purpose was to preach on sub-religious principles such as ahimsa or non-violence. And the final one that we hear about is Kalki. Kalki, the Kalki avatar, comes at the end of Kali Yuga, the end of this age of quarrel. And when people's consciousness, their minds, will be virtually no better than that of animals, they'll be acting on the animal level, then he will show his mercy, Krishna will show his mercy in the Kalki incarnation, and he will kill everyone, and in this way send them to the spiritual world. So that is one way to get the mercy of God, but there are other more pleasant ways. Those days are described what will happen near the end of this age, how degraded and horrible and fearsome things will become. It's described in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, how people will diminish in size, even if one wants to be a vegetarian, one will not be able to be because there will be no vegetables. People will be living under the ground. The kings will be plunderers. People will be living in like packs, like wolves practically speaking. It would be horrible. So, Sridhar Swami comments on the verse that describes the Kalki avatar. He says that some of the avatars that have been mentioned, the Leela avatars that have been mentioned, some of them have already come. This was, he was speaking of during the time of Narada Muni's conversation with Lord Brahma. Some of them have already come, like Varahadev. Some were still on the planet, like Parsaram and Dhanvantari. And some of them were still to come, like Kalki and Ram. Then that ends the first section of this chapter of the second canto. Now, in summing up these Leela avatars, Narada Muni says in text 39, Sarge tapoham rishayo navaye prijesha. At the beginning of creation, there are penances. Myself, Brahma, and the Prajapatis, the great sages who generate. Then during the maintenance of the creation, so there are three stages, and anything that's in existence in the material world, its existence is in one out of three stages. It's either being created, it is either maintaining, or it is being destroyed. So, the great sages who generate, the creators, and then during the maintenance of the creation, there's Lord Vishnu, the demigods with controlling powers, and the kings of different planets. But at the end, near the time for destruction, there is irreligion. And Lord Shiva, and the atheists, full of anger. All of them are different representations of the manifestations of the energy of the Supreme Power, Lord Krishna. So everything that goes on within this world, whether it be in the stage of creation, maintenance, or destruction, it is all going on, regardless of how it seems to be going on, it is actually, ultimately, going on by the power of Krishna, the Supreme Lord. There is nothing in existence that is outside of His power. And whatever is in material existence that is going on, it is going on by His power. Everything is done by the energies of the Lord. So maybe you can put on the tape which Prabhupada speaks something about the Leela avatars.
In Vrindavan. Inhabited by demigods, men, and lower animals. And in this play, he assumes the roles of incarnations to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness.
Bhavati esha satyena lokanvi lokabhava lila avataranu rato divasijjan dharadish. So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Leelavatara, incarnates in many forms, not only in the human society, but in the demigod society or lower than human society, the animal society, also, tree society, because as we have forgotten our relationship with Krishna, He is always anxious to get us back to home, back to God. So He incarnates Himself in so many forms. Advaita yachyate anadi ananta rupam. He has got ananta rupam, unlimited forms. Advaita yachyate anadi. But all those forms are in essence one, advaita. That is not different. Just like Ramadi Murtishu. The Lord appears as Ramachandra or as Lord Krishna or as Lord Varaha. They are not different in a material sense. A Varaha, a hog is different from the man, or the man is, one man is different from another man. But the incarnations of Krishna, they are not different. The same thing. Just like Krishna, when he appeared, he is Krishna when he was so-called 3 months old, and he was Krishna when he was 20 years old. The same Krishna. And we find difference that the same man, when he is 3 months old, he is different from the 20 years old. When his age is 20 years, he is different from his age when his age is 3 months. The modern fashion is that they want to become God by meditation, by advancement of mystic power, but that kind of God is not Krishna. Krishna does not become God. He is God always. Others, they try to become God by mystic power. We have heard so many so-called gods that he attained such perfection of mystic power, now he has become God. That is also another Maya. Nobody can become God. God is God, dog is dog. This is the law of identity. A dog cannot become God. Neither God becomes dog. This is Mayavad theory. That at the end, the absolute truth is void or impersonal. The Buddhist theory is void and the Mayavadi theory is impersonal. But our philosophy is that God is originally the Supreme Person. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Sadhguru. We have discussed this point many times. Now, here it says, Lilavatara Anurata Devatirjam Naradesh. God is always anxious to get us back, back to home, back to Godhead. So apart from his incarnations amongst the Deva, demigods, just like Upendra, Lord Bhavande, he appeared amongst the demigods. There are so many other incarnations, demigods. Tirjam, God appeared as incarnation of bow, incarnation of horse, incarnation of tortoise, Kesava Dhita Kurma Sarira Jaya Jagadisharam Kurma Sarira Kesava Dhita Meena Sarira Jaya Jagadisharam. There are so many incarnations. Kesava Dhita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisharam Kesava Dhita Bhamana Rupa Jaya Jagadisharam. So, he has got innumerable incarnations. As I have told you several times, just like the waves of the river, one cannot count. Similarly, nobody can count how many incarnations are coming, always, incessantly, one after another. So, Lilavataranato Devatityam Naradishu. And amongst the human being, we know Lord Ramchandra came, Lord Krishna came, Rishabdev came, and Lord Chaitanya in Krishna is always trying, because he is the father. Krishna says, Aham bija padat pita sarva joni shukonti. So at the present moment, the whole civilization is a set of rascals on this earth. There is no education. They do not know. And because they do not know, Krishna comes just to make this rascal clean for. Perhaps Krishna says, aham adhi devanam aham sarvasya prabhava matta sarvam pravartate sarva dharman parityaja mamekam saranam vaya varmana bhavad bhakta madhya. Canvas. My dear sons, why you are rotting in this material world? Please come, you are my beloved son. I do not tolerate, or I cannot see that you are suffering. This is Krishna's business. He is more kind. He is more anxious to get us back. Therefore he comes personally. Then again when he mistaken, Krishna said, sarva-dharmān parityajya māmekam saraṇam vaja. The rascals, they thought, why he is demanding so much? This is sophistry. Why should I surrender to you? That is our position. Krishna said that you surrender, I take charge of you. Mā śūca aham pāsarvi pāpemu mokkhaśyāmi. I shall give you relief from all difficulties. No, why should I? Just see how much rascals we are. And they are going on a civilized. All fools, rascals, and rogues and thieves, that's all. This is the position. All fools and rascals and rogues. Ajānata. Ajānata means rascals, one who does not know. Ajānata. Therefore, Vyāsadeva made this śāstra, this śrīmad-bhāgavata. Ajānata, for these rascals, one who does not know the aim of life. Anattha upasamam sākṣāt bhakti yogam adhokale. We are meeting with so many problems of life, these are called anarthas, unnecessary. I am spirit soul, you are spirit soul, we are as good as God, anandamaya vyāsāt, our real position is ananda. Satchidananda. Oh, why you are meeting so many problems? This is due to this body. Therefore, the real culture is, real education is, how to stop this repetition of birth when they do not know. Anandamaya vyāsāt, we are part and parcel of Krishna, is fully joyful. You will see always Krishna joyful. When he is killing an animal, he is laughing, he is joyful. You have seen Krishna's picture. It is not that it is a problem. You have seen Krishna is killing the Keshi demon, a horse, big horse. And it is just like a child's play. Krishna, I will say, fighting with that bull. What is the name of that bull? Arishtasu, he will be attacking with his horns. Krishna is just like playing with a toy. That is Krishna. So, Krishna is always anxious to give us enlightenment that this is not your life, why you are rotting in this material world. Come back in many ways. Devotijam naradish. He is coming not only in the human society, but in the animal society also. He is coming in all kinds of. There are so many societies, aquatics, Jalajana Valakkhani Savara Lakkabinshati Trimayurudasa. There are so many living entities, 8,400,000, and they have got their own society, as we know. Birds are the same feather, flock together. So that is called society. That is there in the, you will find all the ants are together, all the birds are together, all the geese are together. So we form this animal society or the human society. That is not a new thing. That is, you see all the crows, they flock together. The crows will not mix with the pigeons, the pigeons will not mix with the crows. That is natural. So there are so many societies, devotees, jananadishu, and in every society there is incarnation of God according to their position, according to their language, according to their problems, there is incarnation. We do not see other incarnations, but we can see the human form of incarnation, Ramadi Muttisu Kalani Amenatishtan. From this Shastra we can understand that there are incarnations amongst the lower animals, bees, birds and everyone. The purpose is to reclaim the fallen souls.
So Krishna so kindly, out of his mercy, as Prabhupada explained, to reclaim the fallen souls, he incarnates and comes in so many different forms out of his compassion. And he instructs in particular ways according to what would be understandable to the different people. And he's so unlimitedly powerful, so unlimitedly powerful, that although he comes to this world, he is not in the world, regardless of the form he comes in, and he is the one, by his energy, is creating the world, maintaining the world, and ultimately destroying the world, and then creating it. Budva budva praliyate, creating it, maintaining it, destroying it, creating it. This happens again and again and again. So the living entities, we in illusion are thinking that we are doing so many things, but actually anything that anyone is doing within this world is being done simply by Krishna's power. Someone is carrying a little bit of pinch of Krishna's power. So therefore, the next point that comes up is how powerful Krishna must be. Now it is essential, and this is one of the main points within this whole canto of the Bhagavatam, it is that it is essential that we understand the great power of Krishna, because once we understand the potency of Krishna, or get a glimpse of the potency of Krishna, that gives us a hint at the process by which we can understand him. Because when we see his inestimable power, or get a glimpse of how vastly more powerful he is than our capacity to understand him, then the only way we can understand him is to put ourselves submissively before him. So in pursuance of that point, Narada or Brahma explains in text 40 and 41, he says, who can completely, totally describe the prowess of Vishnu, of God? Even the scientist who might have counted the particles of the atoms of the universe, even if science can get up to the degree of counting the number of atoms in the entirety of the universe, still they cannot estimate the power of God. Because it is he, Krishna, only in his form of Trivikram, Vamanadeva's Prabhupada mentioned, moved his leg effortlessly beyond the topmost planet, Satyaloka, up to the neutral state of the three modes of material nature, and all were moved. Brahma continues, neither I nor the sages born before you, Narada, can know fully the omnipotent personality of Godhead. So, what can others who are born after us know about Him? Even the first incarnation of the Lord, namely Shesha, has not been able to reach the limit of such knowledge, although he is describing the qualities of the Lord with 1,000 faces. So Brahma is giving us some estimation of our own inability to understand Krishna. No matter if we are the topmost scientists, we still, by the power of our own brain, cannot understand them. And Sridhar Swami comments in this verse that the Lord, this verse states that no one could describe completely what Brahma has described in brief about the potency of the Lord. Even Brahma, what to speak of others, cannot know even the Supreme Lord's maya or illusion. Even Shesha cannot estimate the glories of the Lord with his 10,000 mouths. He cannot describe fully the Lord's prowess. So that gives us a glimpse of how powerful Krishna is in comparison to us. He is so far beyond us. Prabhupada says in the purport of 40, the highest scientific advancement of material scientists is atomic energy. But the material scientist is not able to have an estimation of the particles contained in the whole universe. But even if one is able to count such atomic particles, or is able to roll up the sky like one's own bedding, even then one is unable to estimate the extent of the prowess and energy of the Supreme Lord. But, so how is it possible to know Him then? If we can't describe His greatness, how can we speak about Him? So Sridhar Swami comments in answer to this question, which the next verse does answer. If no one can know the Supreme Lord's incredible prowess, then how can they be described? And his answer is, it can be done by His grace upon a person who sincerely and completely takes refuge at His feet. So the verse, Brahma continues and says, so how is it possible if He's so inestimably powerful? How can we know Him? Anyone who is specifically favored by the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, how can one get the favor of the Lord? Due to His unalloyed or pure surrender unto the service of the Lord. If one serves Krishna with his full heart, such a person can overcome the insurmountable ocean of illusion and can understand the Lord. But on the other hand, those who are attached to the body, who think this is me, even though it is doomed, and even though that we are eternal, if we identify with a body which is meant to be eaten at the end by dogs and jackals, they can never understand. O Narada, although the potencies of the Lord are unknowable and immeasurable, still, because we, meaning Brahma is speaking, because I, are all surrendered souls, we know how the Lord acts through his spiritual yogamaya potencies. And similarly, the potencies of the Lord are also known to the all-powerful Lord Shiva, the great king of the atheist family, namely Prahlad Maharaj, to Swayambhuva Manu, his wife Satyarupa, his sons and daughters like Priyavrata, Uttanapad, Akuti, Devahuti, and Prasuti, Prachini Barhi, Ribu, Anga the father, who is the father of Maharaj Vena, Maharaj Dhruva, Ichaku, Oila, Muchukunda, Maharaj Janaka, Gadi, Raghu, Ambarish, Sagara, Gaya, Nahusha, Mandata, Alarka, Satadanve, Anu, Ranti Dev, Bhishma, Bali, so many people, Hanuman, Vibhishan, Sukadev Goswami, Arjun, Arista Sena, Vidura, Shrutadeva, etc. So there are so many people who actually do know Krishna by His grace. Again, how did they learn about Him? By His grace, because they have surrendered to Him in the mood of service. And then the next verse. Surrendered souls. Here are more names. Srila Swami comments on text 46. What is the use of mentioning more names? He's going to mention more names. Because all, he wants to show, Brahma wants to show that anyone who gains an attachment to Krishna, he can know the science of God, and he can know the glories of the Lord, because one can only know God by the grace of God. So one who becomes attached to Krishna gets His grace and therefore can know. So Brahma continues saying, surrendered souls, even from groups leading sinful lives, such as the women, the laborer class, the mountaineers and the Siberians, or even the birds and beasts, can also know about the science of Godhead and become liberated from the clutches of the illusory energy by surrendering. How? By surrendering unto the pure devotees of the Lord and by following in their footsteps in devotional service. So let's go back and read a few of the purports, the 43 to 45 purports, and then the 1 to 46. All the great devotees of the Lord, as mentioned above, who flourished in the past or present, and all the devotees of the Lord who will come in the future, are aware of the different potencies of the Lord, along with the potency of His name, quality, pastimes, entourage, personality, etc. And how do they know? Certainly it is not by mental speculation, nor by any attempt by dint of limited instruments of knowledge. By the limited instruments of knowledge, either the senses or the material instruments like microscopes or telescopes, one cannot even fully know the Lord's material potency, which are manifest before our eyes. For example, there are many millions and billions of planets far, far beyond the scientist's calculation. But these are only the manifestations of the Lord's material energy. What can the scientists hope to know of the spiritual potency of the Lord by such material efforts? Mental speculations, by adding some dozens of ifs and maybes, cannot aid the advancement of knowledge. On the contrary, such mental speculations will only end in despair, by dismissing the case abruptly and declaring the non-existence of God. The same person, therefore, ceases to speculate on subjects beyond the jurisdiction of his tiny brain. And, as a matter of course, he tries to learn to surrender to the Supreme Lord, who alone can lead one to the platform of real knowledge. So this is the point of Brahma's explaining some of the vastness of the greatness of God, so we can understand again that He is so far beyond our ability to understand that we can't use the usual process that we use in the material world to get knowledge, meaning our intelligence. We cannot use that to understand God. He's just too vast. If I had 10 seeds here, or 20 seeds, or 50 seeds just put on the table, it's a very small amount, so I could conceive of picking them up and trying to understand how many there are. But imagine if the whole room was full of seeds. How would I understand? So maybe I could figure out some way to calculate, well, if there was 1 square inch by 1 square inch and it was so many seeds, then I could figure out how many. But just imagine the atoms of the entirety of the universe, and that is just one insignificant portion of the material energy of God. So how are we ever going to understand his potency, his material potency, what to speak of his spiritual potency, what to speak of him, he himself, the source of that potency, who is unlimited, omnipotent, omniscient, and yet in form as a person. So this is called achintya shakti, inconceivable energy. So to understand the inconceivable is by definition impossible, unless the inconceivable reveals something to us. Then he can say, I am like this, and I have this, and I'm like that, and that, and that, and that. So the process of surrender, the process of bhakti yoga, is the process of evoking the grace of Krishna. So he reveals what he wishes to reveal to us. Prabhupada continues. He's criticizing the scientists who try to estimate everything and they by their own intellectual prowess, and then they conclude, oh, because we can't do it, therefore no one can say anything about God, agnosticism. But God can say something about God, and if he says something about himself, that is perfect. So he's criticizing. So therefore, Prabhupada says, the sane person therefore ceases to speculate on subjects beyond the jurisdiction of his tiny brain, and as a matter of course, he tries to learn to surrender unto the Supreme Lord, who can alone lead one to the platform of real knowledge. In the Upanishads, it is clearly said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never be known simply by working very hard and taxing the good brain, nor can he be known simply by mental speculation or jugglery of words. The Lord is knowable only by one who is a surrendered soul. Herein, Brahmaji, the greatest of all material living beings, acknowledges this truth. Therefore, the fruitless spoiling of energy by pursuing the path of experimental knowledge must be given up. One should gain knowledge by surrendering unto the Lord and by acknowledging the authority of the persons mentioned herein. The Lord is unlimited, and by the grace of his spiritual energy, Yogamaya, he helps the surrendered soul to know him proportionately with the advance of one's surrender. And in the next verse, sometimes there are inquiries as to how one can surrender unto the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 1866, the Lord asks Arjuna to surrender unto him. What is the Sanskrit of that verse? You know that one? Krishna asks Arjuna to surrender unto him, and therefore persons unwilling to do so question where God is and to whom they should surrender. The answer to such questions or inquiries is given herein very properly. The personality of Godhead may not be present before one's eyes, but if one is sincere in wanting such guidance, the Lord will send a bona fide person who can guide one properly back home, back to Godhead. There is no need of material qualifications for making progress on the path of spiritual realization. In the material world, when one accepts some particular type of service, he is required to possess some particular type of qualification also. Without this qualification, one is unfit for such service. But in the devotional service of the Lord, the only qualification required is surrender. Surrendering oneself is in one's own hands. If one likes, he can surrender immediately without delay, and that begins his spiritual life. The bona fide representative of God is as good as God himself, or in other words, the loving representative of the Lord is more kind and more easy to approach. A sinful soul cannot approach the Lord directly, but such a sinful man can very easily approach a pure devotee of the Lord. And if one agrees to put himself under the guidance of such a devotee of the Lord, he can also understand the science of God and also can also become like the transcendental pure devotee of the Lord, and thus get back his liberation, and thus get his liberation back to Godhead, back to home, back home for eternal happiness. So realization of the science of Godhead and relief from the unnecessary, useless struggle for existence are not at all difficult for the willing candidate. But they are very difficult for persons who are not surrendered souls, but only simple, profitless speculators. So what, if one surrenders to Krishna, what does one, after knowing that he's vast, so unlimitedly vast, and therefore one surrenders unto him, surrenders to his representative, what does one learn about him? So the next verse, describes some of the qualities of the Lord, and they are vast type of qualities. This is what one realizes by realization. What is realized is the absolute Brahman, or the Supreme Spirit who is everywhere, is full of unlimited bliss, without grief. That is certainly the ultimate phase of the Supreme Enjoyer, the Personality of Godhead. So that is Krishna. He is full of ananda, satchidananda vigraha. He is full of eternity, bliss and knowledge. He is composed of that. His existence is that. He is eternally void of all disturbances and fearfulness, fearless. So all that we don't have in the material world, he has in full. And if we go to him, we will get that through relationship with him. He is completely conscious as opposed to matter, which is unconscious. He is uncontaminated and without distinction. He has no material differences in him. He is spiritually one. His bodily parts can perform the functions of other bodily parts. He is the principal, primeval cause of all causes and effects, in whom there is no sacrifice for fruit of activities. He already has everything. He doesn't have to sacrifice anything. And in whom the illusory energy does not stand. So all these concepts, this is just a more or less, these are the qualities or characteristics of the Supreme Lord, but they are from a distance. Saying those things that we long for in the material world, they exist in full in him, but they don't speak in detail about his qualities, this particular verse. Prabhupada explains in the purport that these qualities that are saying, they don't mean that he is impersonal. So Prabhupada explains, the conception of affection is due to the relationship of soul to soul. It is not from soul. When there are the people that we have affection for in this world, it is actually the soul that we have affection for. We as a soul have affection for another soul, because if the person's, in the story of Maharaj Chitraketu, and he had a son, a great king had a son, Chitraketu, and then the son died. He was poisoned, actually, a little boy, and he was the focused, full attention of all the affection of Chitraketu and his wife Kritajuti. So they saw the boy lying there, and they began to cry and wail. So two great sages, Narada Muni and Angira Muni, came and they said, "Why are you crying?" He said, "Our son is gone." Crying and crying. And he said, "No, your son is here. If you think the boy is his body, if you think that the flesh and blood and muscles is your son, then why are you crying? It's right before you. No. Actually, the relationship and the affection they had for their son, or we have for anyone in this world, is from us, the soul, to them, the soul. It is not due to the bodies. So Prabhupada continues. A father is affectionate to his son because there is some relationship or nearness between the son and the father. But that sort of affection in the material world is full of inebrieties. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead is met, the fullness of affection becomes manifest. The soul to the Supreme Soul's full affection becomes manifest because of the reality of the affectionate relationship. He is not the object of affection by material tinges of bodies and mind, but he is the full, naked, uncontaminated object of affection for all living entities, because he is the super soul or Paramatma within everyone's heart. In the liberated state of affairs, the full-fledged affection for the Lord is awakened. As such, there is an unlimited flow of everlasting happiness without the fear of its being broken, as we have experienced here in the material world. The relationship with the Lord is never broken. Thus, there is no grief and no fear. Such happiness is inexplicable by words, and there can be no attempt to generate such happiness by fruitive activities, by arrangements or sacrifices or anything that we can do in our attempt to make happiness in the material world. Anywhere near on the level as between the soul when he is awake to his relationship with Krishna. So Prabhupada, one line that shows the personality of the soul is ultimately a person and the Lord is ultimately a person, because Prabhupada says in the court purport, otherwise there cannot be any reciprocation of unhampered spiritual happiness exchanged between them in spontaneous unbroken joy, unless there is personality for both. So when one is on that level of realizing the Lord, on that level, when he is awake as a soul to his relationship with Krishna, Sridhar Swami comments that nothing remains undone for the accomplished sages who have fixed their mind on the glorious Lord. So when one is awake in that way, one has everything that one had ever dreamed of in the farthest reaches of his dreams for happiness. He has that fully, not the dream, but the reality of it. So in such a transcendental state, there is no need of artificial control of the mind, mental speculation or meditation as performed by the jnanis and the yogis. One gives up such processes as the heavenly king Indra foregoes the trouble to dig a well. So Jiva Goswami comments, other methods are abandoned for devotion to the Lord, who is the refuge of knowledge. Once one has that, or once one is fixed in devotion to the Lord, one need no other process, need use any other process. In the purport, and then we'll just read one more after this, one more verse. Prabhupada's purport: a poor man in want of water digs a well and undertakes the trouble of digging. Similarly, those who are poor in transcendental realization speculate on the mind or meditate by controlling the senses. But they do not know that such control of the senses and achievement of spiritual perfection are simultaneously made possible as soon as one is factually engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Person, the Personality of Godhead. It is for this reason that the great liberated souls also desire to be associated in hearing and chanting the activities of the Lord. The example of Indra is very appropriate in this connection. King Indra of heaven is the controlling deity or demigod for arranging clouds and supplying rain in the universe. And as such, he does not have to take the trouble to dig a well for his personal water supply. For him, digging a well for water supply is simply ludicrous. Similarly, those who are factually engaged in the loving service of the Lord have attained the ultimate goal of life. And for them, there is no need of mental speculation to find out the true nature of God or his activities, nor do such devotees have to meditate upon the imaginary or real identity of the Lord, because they are factually engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The Lord's pure devotees have already achieved the results of mental speculation and meditation. The real perfection of life is therefore to be engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The personality of Godhead is the supreme master of everything auspicious. Because the results of whatever actions are performed by the living entity in either the material or spiritual existence are rewarded by the Lord. So he is the one who gives everything, everything good, everything auspicious. They are all ultimately awarded by him. As such, he is the ultimate benefactor. Every individual living entity is unborn. So just backing up a little bit. So if we take shelter of him in devotion, since he is the ultimate benefactor of everything, if we take shelter of him in devotion, what will be our loss? What could be our loss if we take shelter of him? Because everything good is coming from him anyway. And then, as the last part of the verse, an answer to the question, since the Lord is the origin of all our good and bad karma, what happens if all Maya is removed? If there is no more karma for us, do we cease to exist anymore in individuality? So Jiva Goswami says, if Maya is removed, but this question answers. If Maya is removed, does the individual soul still exist? So therefore, Brahma says, as such, the Lord is the ultimate benefactor, and every living entity is unborn. And therefore, even after the annihilation of the material elementary body, the living entities exist, exactly like the air within the body. So we are covered by so much karma, so many good and bad reactions to things we have done in this life and previous lives. They cover us like so many layers of clothing covering our real self. But what are we underneath all that? What we are is eternal spirit souls who have a relationship with Krishna. So once all the karma, the good and bad, is removed and we are awake to our relationship with Krishna, then we will live with him forever. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. You all very patiently listened to another long and technical class. Srila Prabhupada Ki. So we'll be finished on Monday. We should finish. There's only a few more verses in this chapter.